Josh, there is plenty to get through. There's two big reports coming out of Wellington Phoenix, both in regards to transfers, one in regards to their coach and also his future. We'll get to that later on. Plus, we have the A-League previews and more news to get through, and also the Sydney Morning Herald's Vince Rugari will be joining us at 5:15 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on the show.
I've been so used to saying daylight. It's going to take a second.
We don't have daylight savings anymore, but it is standard time, so we're all on the same page, except for Perth.
And Adelaide, I suppose.
And Adelaide.
You know, they still lag behind, but that's okay. We'll forgive them.
But you can still get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. Or if you are joining us on Facebook, please comment below. We will get through all of your comments throughout the next hour. Plenty to get through. Let's get to this first report, Josh. Massive report coming out of SBS stating that Wellington Phoenix's head coach Mark Rudin has informed the A-League club he won't see out the second year of his contract and will actually return to Australia. And this comes despite his incredible season that he's had with the Phoenix. We know he's only been there since the start of the season, and you know, the speculation has just been growing week after week, and we've been going through this, and he's been linked away from the club, and now it's starting to come to the fore because we are only a few weeks out from the completion of 2018-19.
This is no surprise to me whatsoever. We've been hearing about this and speculating on it all season long. We heard from Jason Pine a couple of months ago that, you know, he stipulated that if Wellington Phoenix don't bring his family out, don't find a way to do that and accommodate them all, he'll be leaving. I'm sure there's other considerations as well. The chance to start up something new with a new franchise, Western United, is very much the likely or the almost certain destination at this point. I think it's a massive blow for Wellington, considering how Rudan has been transformative upon them this season. Think of the place they were in under Kalisic last campaign. It's worlds apart.
Miles apart.
And
you don't want
to
see them go back to that state, though.
I think the players need to take the confidence from that, because every time we talk to a Wellington Phoenix player, we've asked, what is it? How has he waved this magic wand and made you into better footballers? And a lot of them have said, he's changed our mentality. He's made us believe in ourselves. I think Kalisic was a very harsh and cruel coach who really ground his players' confidence into the dirt. And Rudan's been the absolute opposite. Yes, he's a stern taskmaster, but he's made them believe that they can actually take on the very best in the A-League. He's instilled that confidence in them, and it's such a mental game, football. They need to persist with that and find a coach who will carry on where Rudan has left off. If they don't, then we could see Wellington Phoenix getting back to the bad old days and swiftly being kicked out of the league.
And that's not what we want.
Yeah, the bad old days were pretty bad in Wellington. I mean, the attendance is terrible. The TV ratings even worse. There's not a large portion of even New Zealanders who tune in on Sky New Zealand, according to people I've spoken to. So they economically, they're in a tenuous position as to what do they add to the league. I like
them. But that's also why Mark Rudin has been such a shining light for them this season, because going into 2018-19, we knew that their A-League license was on the line. Mm. So it was all quite up in the air. And now the narrative has started to change. We've seen them perform tremendously well throughout the past couple of rounds and throughout the season. And it all comes back to Mark Rudin and the influence he's had, not only on the club, but also the players and the fans. We saw a record crowd a couple of weeks ago. So everything seems to be working well under Mark, but he doesn't seem to be happy.
And
it's hard for him because he's away from his family as well.
Exactly. And I don't think, you know, Wellington fans can really vilify him for wanting to get out of this contract and go back home to Australia, even if it isn't in Sydney. If it is in Melbourne, it's a lot closer than Wellington is. And, you know, he wants to make a next step in his career. And just be thankful that he was in charge and he is in charge for the rest of the season, where there's still a danger of doing something in this final series. I think, you know, he's the kind of coach who can come up with a game plan for the one-off fixtures to really counteract a lot of the opposition threats. We saw him come twice to Melbourne and get a point of victory both times, probably being the better team. So I think they're in good stead. They just need to find a coach, maybe a local coach. It needs to be someone with has the right badges, which has been a barrier for them in the past, because Chris Greenacre, who's been the caretaker upteen times, wasn't able to take over because he lacked the coaching badges. There was a local coach, I think, in charge of Auckland, who didn't have the right accreditation either. So that's difficult to bridge to cross. But I think it would be great if they could get a local New Zealand coach, just because I think there's a sense of pride in that team, because it is, because they don't have a local rival, it is in fact New Zealand's team, and they need to play up to that. And the fact that they've got so many young Kiwis in the side has really helped. So they need to continue on Mark Redan's legacy and what he's achieved so far, and not look back and regret and get into some sort of bitter contracted legal dispute over him fulfilling his contract.
And more importantly, the players need to also be in the right frame of mind come next season. That'll also assist with them moving forward and not reverting to the bad old days and bad habits. So as you touch on, it is a real mental game, isn't it? But we have seen the likes of Roy Krishna, who is joint leading the A-League Golden Boot Race. Isn't that incredible? I find it such an incredible story. And on that note, Josh, while we're here, the PFA have actually crowned teammate David Williams Player of the Month for March. And that's the club's second player who have received the PFA accolade this season.
That's fantastic, and he totally deserves it. David Williams, he has been a revelation this season. We've always thought with Williams, he's such a pretty player. He does so much good work in the lead-up. He's a great dribbler, can take plays on. He's got speed. He gets into good positions. But the thing that stopped him from being a real standout in the A-League, and really a Socceroos player, he was touted, don't forget, by Miron Blyberg as the best young talent he'd seen since Harry Kuehl when he was a young player coming through at Brisbane Roar. And, you know, he's had some overseas moves. He thought it would work out better for him. But in the latter stage of his career, he's come back here to Australia and he's proved that he can finish. He does have end product. He can score goals. And he's been one of the best players of the whole campaign, as has Roy Krishna, who, less surprisingly for me, he just needed a better team around him, because he's been a standout regardless of where the Wellington Phoenix have been on the table. And as soon as he's got players like Sarpreet Singh and David Williams and Mandy feeding him the ball, and even, you know, crosses in from the likes of Libby Kakachi, who's been fantastic,
getting a few assists on the board.
You just see what a superstar this guy really is. And playing closer to goal, similar to Costa Barbarouses, is a guy who's been more known as a winger or attacking winger. Playing closer to goal has helped him as well.
And David's 5 goals of his 11-goal tally came in just 3 matches. So, again, that is why he was voted by his peers for the PFA Player of the Month for March, which is just incredible. And he now goes down with Roy Krishna, as we've been touching on, who is the other recipient for Wellington Phoenix throughout the season.
And he deserves it too. And that goal that he scored, that hat-trick.
The hat-trick goal was the one that really capped it off.
That was stunning, wasn't it? It was just that perfect, you know, when you hit the shoulder button on FIFA just right, it picks out the top corner.
And we heard from Liberato Kakachi, who was on the show last week or the week before, and he said that he was in the perfect position to see that goal. He was just behind David and he could see it curling.
That's always the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
The ideal angle. I think in midweek for victory in the ACL, we got that from the Anderson Talisca. The camera is just in the right place and you just see it drop into the net. So aesthetically, I think one of the nicest goals in football is the curl into the absolute top reaches of the top corner.
Goals like that, I would pay big money to see.
And I hope the Wellington fans continue to pay to watch that, because they need to support their team. It's no sure thing that they'll be involved long-term in the A-League. So if they want the Knicks to survive, and we had the Save the Knicks campaign and the hashtags and all the goodwill, and that's ebbed away over a season and now it's starting to come back, regardless of Mark Redan being there or not, they need to keep up that momentum and really put their money where their mouth is and vote with their feet for Wellington Phoenix to stay in the A-League.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR with Louise Taffer and Josh Parrish. And joining us now is the Sydney Morning Herald's journo, Vince Rugari. Vince, thank you so much for coming on Evenings on FNR.
No worries, guys. How are you?
We're fantastic, Vince. And Just talk to us a little bit about Kyle Valeri to start off with, announcing his retirement today. I think, you know, speculated ever since Victor released that press announcement last night, a major player announcement. People were speculating as to whether it might be a Keisuke Honda contract extension, but instead it's Valeri deciding to call time on what's been a pretty storied career.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Not too many players, come out of Australia these days and carve out the kind of career that he has. Not a world sort of conquering midfielder at all, but the kind of player who knows his role and performs to perfection. A really good defensively minded midfielder, good at organising things for the rest of the team. Leadership qualities, they speak for themselves. And a Melbourne Victory legend as well for what he's done the last few years since coming back to Australia. Full credit to him. He was probably coming towards the end of his tether. I think everyone could see maybe in the last year and a half that he was starting to run out of gas. Father time comes for us all at some stage, doesn't it? But, hopefully, for his sake, Victory can make a strong end to the season and send him out on a positive note.
And I just think it's fantastic that he's able to end on his own terms instead of on the terms of that kind of mystery brain-swelling illness that he contracted a little while back.
Yeah, he's been in the wars a little bit over the journey, as Carl. So, I'm pleased with that too. Hopefully it can have a big impact as well. There's some huge games coming up with the finals as well. We know how good Victory are when it comes to, finals football and standing up in the big games. And I'm sure he'll want to make the absolute most of it.
And Vince, how do you think Melbourne Victory will go this weekend when they host the Central Coast Mariners, who I think can't be underestimated at this point in time?
No, they can't, but they also can't be overestimated, I wouldn't have thought. If I was a gambler, which I'm not, I'd be putting money on Victory there, although I'm not sure what sort of return you'd get out with, which would make the whole exercise rather futile, I would have thought. At home, Victory with the, all their big guns are playing. I know they had a disappointing result in midweek, but to come home with everything, that's in front of them and needing to stitch up third spot or hopefully, try and lock in the second spot if it's still possible. And you never know, Sydney FC might slip up in the next couple of games. That's a pretty safe, bankable win for Melbourne Victory, I would have thought, or it should be anyway. Otherwise, maybe they're not as much chop as what people regard them.
Moving on to the Sydney Derby, Vince, it's a big game for both sides. Wanderers more, sentimentally speaking or symbolically more than for finals placing, obviously. But we were talking to Oriol Riera on this station yesterday and he said he's looking forward to trying to win his last derby. So probably on his way out of the club.
Yeah, that's no real surprise, I don't think. I spoke to Ori, a few months back and he was a little bit iffy about his future, whether he wanted to stay, whether the club wanted to keep him, or it wasn't clear. And if no offers come and he's talking like that, then I think the writing's on the wall, which is, it's an interesting one with Riera because he's probably the best striker Western Sydney Wanderers have ever had in terms of output and in terms of, line leading quality. But
you don't think Big Dino Cressinger takes that title, Vince?
No, I don't, mate, no. It's funny though, Riera's probably the right striker at the wrong time for them, if he was kicking around in the early days of the Wanderers, maybe that would have been a significantly better team because he's a good player and look, yeah, it's true that he spent some chances, but he still scored more goals than any other Wanderers player in a season, I'm pretty sure. So, there's going to be a lot of turnover this season with the Wanderers as Marcus Babbel shapes the squad the way he wants, having largely inherited the one they've got this season. So to shape your squad in the A-League, you've really got to choose your own foreigners. And it looks like Riera might be one of the guys sacrificed so he can do that.
And who do you think he might bring in?
I have absolutely no idea, Louise. I'm sure Marcus has got a large contact book and a lot of people in Germany and Europe who he can work with to bring in players. He's done pretty well so far with Baum Johan, I think, and also Patrick Ziegler, who, when he's been fit, has shown that he's a very good defender. When you've got the sort of networks that a guy like Marcus Babbel does, you've probably got access to, players that Australian people or Australian clubs without those networks would struggle to attract, I think. So I'm sure he can pull out a couple of decent imports for next season.
Do you think any other A-League clubs will try and come in for Riera, or is he off overseas? And just on a wider point, what do you think about, you know, we've heard rumours of Eric Boetiak and Melbourne Victory. What do you think about foreign players being recycled in the A-League?
Look, foreign players being recycled in the A-League as a concept is fine. Like, I don't think there's a problem with it. It's you judge it on a case-by-case basis, and a lot of the time it happens because of salary cap squeezes. Like, you know, Bessar Berisha should have stayed at Brisbane Roar, really, if you want to talk about, you know, players who were brought to the A-League by one club and went to another. He was squeezed out there because Thomas Broich had the marquee spot. The other one was sewn up as well by someone else, and they couldn't keep him on the money he deserved. So, invariably, that's what happens. And if I was Eric Boetiak, I wouldn't be, you know, sticking around in Brisbane Roar for too much longer, given the way that club's going at the moment and their, you know, lack of certainty around a coach. I don't know if anyone else in the A-League would sign up Oriel Riera. Maybe they would, maybe they won't. But every murmur I've heard, from Riera and all the talk around has been that he'd be pretty keen to return to Spain rather than stick it out in Australia. I think he was pretty close to going back to Spain earlier this season and in the January window as well. So I seriously doubt he'd entertain any other offer than from the Wanderers. And even then, he'd need to weigh it up with, you know, family and monetary concerns and things like that.
And he did mention last night that he's expecting another child in October. If he stays in the country, maybe the child, whether it's a boy or girl, could play for the Socceroos or Matildas.
Oh, maybe. Let's just try and keep him in the country first, which I don't think is probably going to happen anyway. Maybe the kid will grow up with an affinity for Australia. Maybe he might not ever set foot in Australia. Who the bloody hell knows?
That hasn't been a barrier for some Socceroos recently, and I don't think it should be either, but that's another discussion. I want to talk a little bit about one of your articles earlier in the week, Vince, about the Wanderers and Bankwest Stadium. I think this rumour, to be honest, was started by Brenton Speed on Twitter trying to say that they should play the Sydney FC finals matches at this new stadium, which is Wanderers' home ground, but of course owned by the it's not paid for by the Wanderers privately, of course. So what's your stance on it?
Yeah, I don't know if Speedy started it, but he certainly added fuel to it, and so did a conversation I had with Greg O'Rourke on the weekend when I was talking to him about the, you know, the SCG stuff, and I put it to him, like, you know, would you consider Bankwest as a, you know, possible A-League finals venue for Sydney FC? And he was, you know, he said he didn't rule it out, which meant, you know, it's a possibility. So that's from the horse's mouth. Although, if you listen to everything that's come out since from the Wanderers and Sydney FC, I seriously doubt it's going to happen. But it's an interesting thought experiment, just because, you know, if the Wanderers weren't struggling for the last few years and you know, had already played a couple of games at that stadium, maybe you'd think about it. Because if we're being fair dinkum, the best football stadium in Sydney at the moment is Bankwest Stadium. There's no shadow of a doubt about that. And Sydney FC could probably pull a decent crowd there still, even though it's 20-odd k's away from their target area or whatever you want to call it. So it just can't happen, though, just because of what the Wanderers have been through and what that stadium really means to that club at the moment with where they're at. I think a lot of Sydney FC fans just want to play a game there because it would piss a lot of Wanderers fans off, which, look, admittedly, it'd be hilarious, but it would also be cruel at the same time. And it's not going to happen, I don't think.
And Vince, you wrote another article this week, and we have Ian Syson coming on the show next Wednesday to discuss the football ashes, which is what you wrote about. Tell our audience what FFA are trying to do.
Yeah, FFA, you know, Chris Nicker has met with Ian, and basically they want to help Ian find the soccer ashes, which is, it's a pretty noble task and a good thing to hear. Like, a lot of people slam FFA for disrespecting our history and whatnot, and a lot of those charges, you know, are guilty most of the time. But it's good that, you know, Chris could quite easily fob off Ian or any historian with some sort of, you know, strange trophy that no one's ever heard about since the 1950s, and say we've got other priorities at the moment, and they probably do, given the length of the to-do list in Australian football at the moment. But it's just a nice thing to do, I reckon. I'm hopeful that the article we ran in the Sydney Morning Herald today can flush out any, you know, old Socceroos of the era, if they happen to stumble across it, and, you know, remember something about the Soccer Ashes, how big that trophy was back in the day, who might have it now, all those sorts of things. And it would honestly be amazing if it was to turn up somewhere. I doubt it's going to happen. Ian told me there's probably a less than 50% chance that it'll turn up. But we've got to have a crack. And if it doesn't turn up, I'd like to see it, recreated a little bit like the FFA Cup was modelled on the old Australia Cup and given a modern purpose. And there's no reason why we can't do that with the Soccer Ashes and put that up for any time Australia and New Zealand compete at international level, men's and women's, and at all ages.
Well, if you're watching on the Facebook or Twitter Live, listeners, there is actually a picture of this trophy on the wall. That's what that big white sign is. And here at FNR, we're determined to try our best to find it before Anzac Day, or at all would be great. If it's still around, personally, I doubt it, but it leads into a wider conversation about history in Australian football and trying to keep that history alive, which is something that FFA and the football community at large has been really not that great at doing.
No, it's, as Ian said in the article, we're probably world champions at disrespecting our history and forgetting about it and that sort of thing, which is a shame. And it happens at all, during all eras of Australian football. You can't just put this one at the feet of the A-League or the Lowies because, when the immigrants in the post-war period came through, they didn't really pay too much attention to what happened before them. And the game has a history that dates right back to the 1800s sort of thing. So it's just the nature of the game and what's happened in the past is that we've been bad at keeping records, bad at acknowledging what's come before us because we're so keen to create a bright new dawn for the game. Unfortunately, in that process, we forget about the things that come before us and that's the sort of thing. We need to get back and weave all that tapestry together so we can appreciate that this is a game that is significant. It's been in Australia as long as any other sport, and has touched a lot of lives. And that's people talk about soccer is not an Australian game and that sort of thing. That it's a new game in Australia, and that's just not true. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny. And the more evidence we can stitch together to create a compelling historical narrative of the game in Australia, I think the better the future will be. That's for sure.
Well, Vince, I think that's as good a note as any to leave it on for this week. And thank you so much for joining us here on Evenings on FNR for our Journo segment. We look forward to speaking to you again soon. And, keep the history alive.
My pleasure, guys. Good on you.
Vince Rigari from the Sydney Morning Herald joining us for our Journos program.
I like that idea of recreating the football ashes.
Yeah, I do.
If we don't find it. It's probably in someone's attic.
Yeah.
But recreate it.
Yeah, I think that would be a fantastic gesture. And it talked about in Vince's article today, Vince and Dominic Bossi, I should say, go read the hairdryer, as they call it, their Friday segment in the Sydney Morning Herald, if you haven't already. Because even if it's not there, then, and there was a trophy, I think it was the Australia Cup that was due to an FFA oversight, thrown out during a redevelopment of the Hakoa Club. But they went back, realised the mistake, and they modelled the existing FFA Cup trophy on the old Australia Cup, which is a fantastic gesture. And I think you could do a similar thing with this trophy. I would like to see, personally, every few years a match between Australia and New Zealand for a replica trophy. I would love to keep this tradition or reignite this tradition. And I think it would, strengthen the bond between Australian and New Zealand football, which only really exists due to this artificial A-League connection at the moment, but actually goes back a long way.
And even at youth level, because, of course, Australia used to compete in Oceania before we moved to Asia. So, therefore, Australia aren't playing New Zealand anymore to try and get to the World Cup. Now, we do have our youth national teams who are always in need of more friendly games and in this case it would be competitive, but why not? Schedule it at all levels, under 17, under 20 and under 23s.
And it's not as if New Zealand is some charity case in this department. Australia would benefit too. And think of those young New Zealand players like Sarpreet Singh and Libby Kakachi coming through. They're quality A-League first teamers and would provide a stern test to our younger age groups. So I think this would be a great tradition to reignite. Long term, to be honest, I would like to see Oceania incorporated into Asia in some way. I think it makes very little sense to have this tiny confederation with half a spot, you know, playing amongst itself and then having a do or die qualifier. I would love to see Oceania ingrained into Asia or even East Asia if there was a split, as people talk about, because I think, you know, leaving New Zealand behind in Oceania, Australia probably did a lot of damage to New Zealand football in that. Not that it's necessarily Australia's responsibility, but you have to recognise that that left New Zealand without a regular opponent who was going to really test them
and provide that competition.
The only one is Fiji, and you know they're only testing them because, you know, the standard of Kiwi football for a period there dropped off quite sharply.
There have been calls for Australia to move back into Oceania.
Oh, give me a spell.
I don't think that would do anything for us personally, because I think that although Asia is very, very difficult, we need to stay.
You can't just shy away from that.
Well, we can't keep, you know, chopping and changing. That's the reality, right? We have to just level up to what Asia is currently producing and try to continue to qualify for World Cups, whether they be youth or senior that way. But then again, Gianni Infantino is looking to obviously extend the amount of teams that will be allowed to compete at the FIFA World Cup in the future. So maybe that's a free ticket for all in a sense.
I think if that's the case, Australia needs to try and, you know, not just scrape in. I guess qualification is always good, and you can't forget the long drought between 74 and 06 that Australia did not qualify for a World Cup. But the 48-teamer, I think in that scenario, you've got to be aiming for a 3-seed rather than a 4-seed and not just scraping into the 32 as we currently do, because that tournament is going to be very strangely organised. I think it's a terrible idea.
I do too.
I think it's devaluing the competition. I think it's going to be impossible to watch nearly all the games as I did last year. But I think I only missed 9. But I think regardless of the FIFA expansion or not, Australia needs to decide whether it's going to actually take Asia seriously and start really investing in youth development, because the Southeast Asian nations, whether you think they're there's a lot of derogatory comments when Australia comes against the Southeast Asian nation saying we should be playing them off the park. I see it all over social media, and it's just simply not the case. These countries like Thailand, Vietnam, even Indonesia are improving quickly, and you know that's the reality. We need to lock onto that.
Well, don't worry about South Korea, Japan, Qatar, etc. Worry about those middle tier Asian
the coming
countries
up from below is,
that are really,
and that's what Graham Arnold is saying in every press appearance that he does. And you know, I think he's really woken up to the reality of international level, the lack of resources that the national teams have, lack of preparation time, and the pipeline of players coming through not being that strong. So he's been a little bit of an alarmist lately, and I really don't blame him, to be honest.
No. And again, it's interesting how suddenly your viewpoint changes based on your current perspective.
Yep. Once said that the A-League is not a development league, infamously.
No, and he still agrees with that, because I spoke to him the other day.
I don't see how you can hold the two positions that he does. I think that's a bit of verbal gymnastics that he's pulling at that point in time.
No, but he reinforced that exact quote the other day, which was quite interesting, because he's obviously on Oli Roux's duty at that time, and he said he doesn't think that the A-League is a developmental league. He said basically that you have to earn your spot, which I do agree with, but still our young players need to be getting senior minutes, not as a token gesture, but the good ones need to be getting a run. And again, if we go back to this blueprint, I don't agree with the fact that having two extra spots on the bench for players under 23 is going to do anything at all. I think that's a joke. I think that if you haven't made it by 23, then there's no point.
Maybe under 21.
It should be under 21, and it should be actually two spots in the actual team getting minutes, because the more game time that these young players miss out on, the further back their development goes. It's the reality.
Yeah, and I think the cause for more foreign players in the league is also very short-sighted. I mean, I think you just have to look over to the MLS.
Wasn't that unlimited? Was it an unlimited call?
No, they were calling for, I think, 7 or 8.
Because I think that's what the MLS has.
Yes, and MLS has great entertainment value, and it's got good crowds, healthy commercially, which is something the A-League could strive for. I don't think it's because of the foreign players, but the national teams in the US, especially the men's side of things, not the women's obviously, but the men's, are suffering currently, and they're not producing the players that they wish they were, and the National League isn't feeding into national team success, which is what we all want. So I would disagree with Graham Arnold if he still holds that belief. I think the A-League is a development league, and the one of the main reasons that you have a strong domestic competition is so you have a pathway for players to come through, and currently it's not working.
It's not working. It isn't working. And on that note, let's move on to some other news. Football Federation Australia will launch a final specific marketing campaign, something that we have seen in previous final series, in the hope to boost viewership numbers.
And they need to, with Fox threatening to withhold money, threatening to do all sorts of things because they've got a contract on their hands that's not really producing the goods. And you've seen the plummeting TV ratings. I mean, they're not calculated the same way, obviously, with streams and viewership, but I think the original Melbourne Derby, South v Knights, in total YouTube and Facebook viewership actually outrated the Newcastle Western Sydney Wanderers game the other weekend.
Which was what?
10K for the A-League versus 12.5 for NPL. Now, granted, that's calculated on a very different basis. It's a different system, so it's not a fair comparison, but the 10K figure for that game between two pretty well-supported teams in Newcastle and Western Sydney really shows how far the interest in the A-League has fallen. And I've tried to investigate how much the streaming numbers play into that. I don't know about the MyFootball app, which is used by a lot of people because so many people have Telstra. But apparently the Kayo subscriptions only account for about 5% extra in viewership. So that's not accounting for the drop-off. It's people are losing interest in the A-League, and we have to find a way to reverse that.
No doubt people are losing interest in the A-League because last weekend's Big Blue drew just 25,000 viewers on Fox Sports. That's it's not
diabolical.
It's not good enough. It's again, we're regressing, whether that be because people just aren't interested in watching the A-League, whether it be because it's just not competitive enough, exciting enough for people to turn up. It needs to change. It needs to change. But I don't think, again, it's like just a sugar-coated hit, a final series, to try and boost viewership numbers before, you know, we reach the end of another season. That is certainly not a long-term strategy, unfortunately.
It's something you have to do regardless, as they've got to have some leverage when they're negotiating with Fox. So I totally understand why they would pour resources into it. And also, just generally speaking, even if A-League ratings weren't tanking, why wouldn't you do everything you could advertise the most exciting part of the season, which is, you know, usually when the ratings pick up a little bit for the A-League, people will decry the final system and say we should have first past the post, and in an ideal world, maybe we would. But the reality is the Australian sporting landscape dictates that finals are where people tune in, and FFA need it. The A-League needs it. So that's where we are at present, and you've got to sell what you've got. And I think there's going to be a bunch of really good finals matches, including, pending results, a Melbourne derby potentially.
And we'll get there, the A-League previews. Or should we just touch on, I also want to get your thoughts on the two Asian Champions League matches. Maybe we can work that into our previews.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, well, we will get to the match of the round, the Sydney Derby, but let's start chronologically as they play out from first to last this round. Mm-hmm. Brisbane Roar will kick it off against Wellington Phoenix on Friday night at 7:50 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time at Suncorp Stadium. Wellington Phoenix still remain in the driver's seat to finish fourth, but that's only based on their superior goal difference, I think, Josh. Mm-hmm. But last round, Wellington went into the break 3 goals down to Adelaide United, and Mark Rudin described that as probably the worst 45 minutes of his season.
Yep, that would be accurate, and it was a diabolical display, but I think it's a blip for them this season. As we were talking in the last program, with the lightning round, I don't think it's going to affect them. I think they're they've got a solid foundation, and they had a few players out. I think the defensive injuries have hurt them, but given that they'll get a lot of those players back very soon, I think they're coming into the final series just as strong as they've been all season, regardless of that result.
So you think this is pretty straightforward for Wellington Phoenix against Brisbane Roar?
I wouldn't bet on Brisbane Roar against anybody this season, not even Central Coast, to be honest. Brisbane have been diabolical. We've spoken about their few shining lights, but the injuries and just the disinterest from the ownership group really gives me no confidence that they're going to get a result here, even if they are playing at home. And it's only Louis Fenton out for the season with a foot injury who seems to be out of this game. It looks like Alex Rufa will step into that wing-back role potentially. And in midfield, you could have there's a lot of options. Kupczynski is an option in there. Max Burgess, who I've been very impressed with this season, playing a little bit further back. He's not quite as effective, but I really like him as a player. He's technically very switched on and has been one of those NPL success stories. So I don't think they're going to have any problems taking care of Brisbane. I'm going for a 2-goal margin. I'll say 3-1.
I'm going to also tip Wellington Phoenix to get the job done at Suncorp Stadium. Moving on, Melbourne City will take on Adelaide United on Saturday afternoon at Amy Park. Melbourne City, though, did put 4 past Brisbane Roar in the previous A-League round. I think that Melbourne City will have to be even more clinical when they come up against Adelaide United, because we know that their defence isn't as leaky.
Mm. And I think Melbourne City are in a bad spot. I know they took care of Brisbane rather handily last week, but who doesn't these days? I don't think that means anything necessarily. And I would have a lot more confidence in Adelaide United getting something done, given despite the suspension to Apostolos Stamatolopoulos for that really brainless red card that he picked up.
Yep, so it's 2 games.
Yeah, 2 games out. Obviously, all those injuries. Ken Ilso is long since gone.
What's happening with Craig Goodwin? He's having a mini drought, goal-scoring drought.
I think he started the season in red-hot form, and I think it regressed sort of to more of a mean, and now he's in a bit of a dip. So these things happen. I think if he had someone to cross the ball to, he'd be picking up assists. But throughout his career, he started off as a left-back. He's never been a goal-scorer per se, and a few lightning bolt, you know, free kicks or stunners in FFA Cup grand finals does not a natural goal scorer make. So Craig Goodwin, he's a good player, but I don't think he can be solely relied upon to provide a team with goals. You can't just expect him to produce those kind of wonder strikes every week. So I'm not concerned, to be honest, by his dip in form. I still think he contributes every week with his work rate. If he had targets in the box to aim at, he'd be a lot more effective.
Well, hopefully they can be more effective heading into the final series, because they're going to need to score goals if they want to win games.
Yeah, and I think Mark Rikosa's team, they have a bit of a ceiling on them with his style of play. They can get lucky though. Every team can, but them in particular, because they have that kind of style of play where they can grind out a result. They're very dangerous from set pieces, as we saw in the last round. So I think they'll get the job done against Melbourne City here. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win for the visitors.
And something we didn't mention is there's actually an injury cloud hanging over central defender Bart Schenkerfeld for this match. He's picked up a niggling injury and suffered a strain after training. So whether or not he actually plays in this upcoming game at Amy Park is another question. But without their key defender, then they look a shadow of themselves, because Bart has been crucial in their success this season and limiting the amount of goals conceded.
He's a phenomenon. He's such a good defender. He might be the best defender in the league, to be honest. And he's one of the bright points in this team. Their defensive record is pretty reasonable. They don't have to play 3 or 4 centre-backs at a time. Somebody tell Warren Joyce that, because Bart Schenkerfeld, when he's fit, offers that level of protection. And they've got other good defenders as well.
And he's very classy, because he doesn't ever give away fouls.
No, he's very clean. His pace and his timing are two really amazing assets that he has. And, you know, he's just got that burst of acceleration that can catch up with any attacker. And usually they're not expecting it, because they expect central defenders to be sort of slow, lumbering types. And he catches players off guard time and again, despite having been in the league a little while now. He's going to be a huge miss, and that's one of the reasons I'm tipping Adelaide.
And so if that's the case, Melbourne City won't be able to aim for their 4th place finish and home final.
And I don't think they're going to get it, but I don't think it matters, because they're pretty much out of contention for that third place finish, right, which is the Asian Champions League. That's qualification spot. And that's what City wanted. They wanted an Asian Champions League spot. That was Joyce's remit. I think they would spend a little bit more if they got into that competition. They're obviously one of the key drivers of an independent A-League for next season. And I think that'll also entice them to spend a bit more on the competition once they have a little bit more control over where that money is going. So I don't think Warren Joyce is going to be part of the future at City, regardless of whether he stays in the A-League, maybe picked up by Wellington, please no, or whether he leaves the country and goes back to the youth role that he's probably more accustomed to. I don't think, regardless of where they finish, he's going to be there next season.
No.
And if he is, I think it would be a shocking decision by the club to extend his contract.
Well, his contract ends at the end of the season.
And that's why it's easy to let him go.
It depends what happens in finals, though. If he can turn it around by some miracle in finals, I mean, it's happened before with Melbourne Victory.
It has, but I just don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening, but if by some miracle it does, then you'd have to say that the City Group might offer him a contract extension for the next season.
Could do. But I think it would be short-sighted and it would be based off, you know, a small sample size. But if he did manage to win a title, you couldn't really begrudge him it, I suppose.
Probably not. And again, Marco Kurz's contract is up for Adelaide at the end of the season. So both of these coaches in this tie will be on their way. And we won't be seeing them next season, whether or not...
Probably not.
What happens to Marco Kurz?
He's done. He's already confirmed that he's not having his contract extended. I think Brisbane might have some interest in him.
I think they did, but...
That seems to have dried up. I think he'd be a decent shout for Wellington, but I'd certainly prefer him over Warren Joyce. But I'm not sure he might end up going back to, say, the Bundesliga 2.
That's an idea, though. Marco Kurz going to Wellington Phoenix. He'd be much more suitable.
I think so, too. I think he's got the kind of right ingredients about him to succeed there. A similar-ish style of football. You know, maybe he prefers a more physical variety of player rather than the fleet of tiny attackers that they've got. But if he was working off the same blueprint as Mark Redan, then I think he could be successful there.
Something to think about. And just a final one on this Melbourne City Adelaide United game. I just hope that there's more fans that turn up to this round, because last round there were only just over 5,000 that turned out to Amy Park, which wasn't good enough. Again, reinforcing our point that people just
maybe
aren't
really
interested.
Really, 5,000 there though. I think City have a jack up those crowd figures.
You
a
think
bit.
Less?
Yeah, I think less. I think every time City report a crowd figure, it's less than it actually is. I know every club does it, but City, in my opinion, based on just counting the number of people in the crowd, it doesn't seem like it's entirely accurate.
Which is unfortunate.
And look, I'm sure the club does it for PR purposes, but they're in trouble at the moment. Regardless of the financial backing, they're not adding much to the league either, and I think questions need to be asked.
Moving on, the bigger game in the round, the Sydney Derby. Western Sydney Wanderers are hosting Sydney FC Saturday night, 7:50 p.m. at ANZ Stadium. Hopefully ANZ Stadium's pitch is looking nice and clean.
Fingers crossed. If it's got a cricket pitch on it by some... I'm kidding. But yeah, look,
don't scare the fans like that.
No, it's going to be a cavernous stadium. Hopefully they've got enough fans turning out for this one to actually have some atmosphere.
Fingers crossed. And Steve Corica, Sydney FC's head coach, was quite bullish after his team's 3-3 draw with Shanghai SIPG. No doubt that Sydney FC should have won that. They should have come away with the 3 points after, you know, the performance that they had. In my eyes, it was probably the best chance that they were actually going to win an Asian Champions League game. Unfortunately, it slipped away thanks to Elkerson in the final minutes of the match. But Steve Corica has said that they will actually destroy A-League teams in the coming rounds.
If they play like that.
If they play like that.
It's not quite so brash. I think that performance was a good one. I don't think it's as good as some people are making out. I know the star names on display, Hulk, Oscar, Elkerson, what have you. The defense for Shanghai, I thought, was pretty weak. They couldn't deal with the high ball into the box very well. And Sydney got a little bit lucky with both their first two goals, a big deflection from Sim Deong, who's under an injury cloud for this game now, and that penalty, which is just a totally ridiculous handball. Obviously, the correct decision, but it's what was the defender doing. So I don't think, under normal circumstances, you know, starting Ninkovic on the bench, they score those two goals. But given that they were in that situation, they did well to limit the attacking forays of Hulk and Oscar, conceding three goals aside. I think.
But did they? Because Oscar, two assists on the night, Hulk and also an assist.
I think
maybe they
didn't score. Shanghai were quite efficient, we must say. They did put away all of their big chances. They didn't really blow open opportunities, which Sydney actually did. If you look at Gushanashad and some of the others, they didn't convert a lot of the opportunities. It was the second half, not the first half, when even though it didn't register on the score sheet so much, Sydney were absolutely on top of them in the second half and Shanghai looked underdone. I think it's a creditable performance, but I don't think they were facing anywhere near the quality of opposition that Victory were, for example.
Well, Victory unfortunately got done 4-0. You predicted the right score.
I did.
I predicted a draw in Sydney FC's tie, so we were.
Yeah,
I was kind of close on the money. You were on the money, which is why you're.
I should have put some money on it, shouldn't I? No, it was a shocking performance, and I saw it coming a mile away because Victory were just coming off losing a game in demoralising fashion. Then it's a test of character, as Mark Bosnich was saying on the coverage. You go away to a cauldron of a stadium like Tianhe in Guangzhou, and they had 60,000 people in there all baying for Victory blood, and so it was delivered with Anderson Talisca. I'd seen some highlights before the game. I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty damn good. He was even better than I'd anticipated. I think he might be the best foreign import in, and by extension, the best player currently playing club football in Asia. He's up there anyway.
Oh, he put on a masterclass in the opening 10 minutes. Two goals in 10 minutes. The first one came in the sixth minute, and the second one was just sublime.
It was unbelievable. Oh. He is quite the player. He reminded me of the Brazilian Rivaldo, except he's a little bit quicker, I think. Rivaldo, obviously, a legend of the game, but he just reminded me of that kind of laconic style. He covers more ground than you think he is. He's actually quite quick because he's got those long loping strides and has a divine left foot. So,
and again, Melbourne Victory shouldn't have really given that much space. You can't afford to give any player of that quality that much space.
And Victory are not set up to play in Asia. We were talking about it on Tuesday. They're just not set up to play the kind of game that they need to be able to grind out results or even limit damage away from home.
Which is ironic given the names in the squad that they have at the moment.
Well, I think the names in the squad are set up to play a very attacking brand of football, and they're back four, if you look at it. I think Thomas Deng's the only player you'd say would be, you know, outstanding footballer in their position. Donachie is probably a league average to good A-League centre-back, and the fullbacks we've covered are quite weak. So the lack of defensive cover in midfield has been a huge weakness, and I think Carl Valeri said it to the Chinese interviewer after the game. I think our style of play clashes, and I wonder whether, you know, that frustration, he said he's made his decision for a few weeks, but I can see that frustration maybe playing on his mind and thinking, I can't do this anymore, I'm going to retire.
Maybe it's all mounted, but speaking of Melbourne Victory's defenders, Jörg Niedermeyer has actually said it's been gut-wrenching staying back in Melbourne and training alone while his teammates have been in Asia, but he is quite confident that the team can bounce back to progress further into the final series. But he feels like he needs to be the motivator in the team at the moment to get them up for the weekend's clash against the Mariners.
Yeah, and I think they'll win that one regardless. Shall we go back to the Sydney Derby? We didn't quite finish
on that
one.
We didn't really quite finish it, did we?
Mark Bridge and Tate Russell into the squad, obviously, and those long-term injuries. And then for
Mark
Sydney,
is, as you say, back from injury, just 2 weeks out from his retirement.
Yeah, and I'd love to see him score a goal. He's been one of the Wanderers stalwarts and has had a fantastic A-League career, really, for a guy that maybe years ago when he started you wouldn't have anticipated he'd be here in 2019. But so it's proved, and that's a testament to the way he's looked after himself and his longevity. And I think it'd be great to see him back out on the park, considering in his final season, you know, his body's let him down considerably. But you hear the Wanderers players talk. They all respect Mark Bridge. They all think he's fantastic and he's a big character in that dressing room. So I think, you know, he'll be playing, you know, NPL, even NPL2 probably next season and taking it easy. But on final time for a derby victory, I think there's no one better you'd have coming off the bench than Mark Bridge.
No, and we also heard from Western Sydney Wanderers striker last night on FNR, Oriel Riera. I hope you enjoyed that interview, Josh.
I did.
Because he gave away the fact that this will be his last Sydney Derby, and he is another one who wants to win it. Because it's been quite a one-sided narrative for the past couple of seasons. Sydney FC have, in the past 16 clashes of the Sydney Derby, have won 11 and just lost only once.
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm saying the Wanderers are going to do it. I think Tate Russell is coming into the squad, which is great. They've been playing Bruce Kamau at fullback, which I'm not entirely sure about. But throughout the rest of the squad, I mean, Kwame Yeboah has been a fantastic acquisition. And also, Mitchell Duke has been a revelation. He's been fantastic. Obviously, I think he's twice the player he was since he left for Japan. And he's come back and changed a bit of the mentality of that team and provided a terrific goal return as well from wide position. So they look a different proposition now. I think they can win this game. I think they're super up for it, even if their finals aspirations are down the drain.
I'm going to say a draw. But yeah. I do think that they will come out pretty fired up.
Especially with Sydney with the ACL hangover as well, with the fatigue, and they picked up a couple of injuries, Michael Zullo.
And the Wanderers don't have anything to lose at the moment.
They don't, and they've got everything to prove, especially with the talk during the week about Bankwest riling them up a little bit, the stadium rivalry. I think, you know, they're going to come out firing, and if they can get an early goal, I think it's on for young and old.
And just looking at some of our comments that have come through on Facebook Live, Stan has said, Rudin to Western United, Wellington in trouble, no coach, no money. And, yeah, we've been discussing that the past couple of weeks, so we won't touch on that anymore. We'll quickly touch on the Melbourne Victory, who are taking on the Central Coast Mariners on Sunday at Amy Park. The Mariners say that they will try to run the Premiers off their feet, but you touched on the Victory do have a bit of a hangover after that 4-0 defeat to Guangzhou Evergrande on Wednesday. The Mariners are still trying to avoid the wooden spoon, so maybe they can try and put a few goals past Melbourne Victory, but I don't know.
Important wooden spoon to avoid if Dave Davidovich's article is to be believed. They could be taken out of the league if they finish wooden spooners 3 in a row with the club participation agreement currently the way it is. So
it's not looking good.
Mariners are in a dire straits, but they have looked a little bit better since Alan Stajic has come in, and he's made an impact. I'm not sure how much that is sustainable. Obviously, new manager bounce. Without the level of investment that they need from the owner, I don't think the club is going anywhere anytime soon, but credit to what he's done in a short space of time to at least get the side competitive.
Yeah, definitely. And the final game is Perth Glory hosting the Newcastle Jets on Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Now, will the Glory take out the Premier's plate in this match, Josh?
I think they will. I think Newcastle are pretty demoralised. Despite the win over Western Sydney the other week, I think going to Perth is going to be a bridge too far for them. They've got Corbina Appiah in the squad, who's barely played. Lockie Jackson comes back in as well. So they've got a full-strength team to select, and obviously Perth will rest a few players.
Well, Chris Economides is out for a week, so Jacob Italiano has been promoted. If he's named in the final squad, he will come in for Economides.
This, if he's fit, might be a game for Brendan Santalab, who's just announced his retirement. I think this is the kind of time you want to lean on a backup player like that, and obviously been an emotional week for him. So maybe him coming off the bench or even starting this game, getting a crucial goal for them to wrap up the first bit of silverware, I think that would be a fitting way to see out his career.
One final question. If they do take out the Premier's plate, is the Premier's plate actually waiting there in Western Australia in the wings?
I would certainly hope so.
So they can give it to them at full time.
There have been a few things like this in A-League circles in recent years where the trophy hasn't been ready. They haven't been able to lift it on the night. I really hope FFA address that, because you want that moment. You want the picture. You want the coverage in the West Australian the next day, which never gives Perth anything. It's amazing the lack of real football coverage over in WA, and they haven't really respected the Perth Glory and what they've done this season. So hopefully the sight of them actually lifting a trophy will prompt a little bit of coverage in the local press. So FFA, if the trophy's not over there, get on it, get in the helicopter, whatever you need to do, get it over there.
And Ernie Merrick has said that he will be switching his attention to build for 2019-2020. The Glory have only lost 2 of their last 22 meetings with the Jets, and I am predicting the Glory to wrap up the Premier's plate in this match on Sunday evening. Josh, that's all we've got time for today, but thank you for your company. And it's been a great week in the studio. And if you missed any of the show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. We'll see you again at the same time on Monday.